Joaquin Guzman was born into a poor farming family in the Badiraguato municipality, an impoverished area in the remote Sinaloa state of Mexico. It was the birthplace of many drug lords.
Guzman had a very troubled childhood as he endured physical abuse from his father, and he was constantly around drugs. At age 15, he began helping his father grow marijuana for local drug dealers. By the 1980s, he had joined the Guadalajara drug cartel, and he quickly rose through the ranks. When the cartel disbanded in the late 1980s, Guzman became the leader of the Sinaloa cartel.
Under his leadership, the cartel grew rapidly using creative smuggling techniques Guzman created, such as hiding drugs in chili pepper cans or fire extinguishers, catapulting drugs over the Mexico-U.S. border, and even building air-conditioned tunnels under the border.
In 1993, Guzman was arrested for murder, drug possession, and firearm possession. He was sentenced to 20 years in a maximum security prison. However, using bribes, he was able to continue to manage the cartel from inside prison. By 1995, he became head of a Sinaloa cartel. By 2001, Guzman had escaped prison with the help of corrupt prison guards.
In the early 21st century, Guzman was responsible for the most marijuana and cocaine traffic from Colombia and Mexico to the U.S. Forbes estimated in 2009 that his net worth was worth $1 billion and that the Sinaloa cartels was $3 billion. Also during this period, the Sinaloa cartel fought in many battles with rival gangs and law enforcement, resulting in the deaths of tens of thousands. In 2012, the USA declared Guzman the world's most powerful drug trafficker.
In 2014, Guzman was arrested again. However, in 2015, he escaped prison again by creating a tunnel beneath his shower connecting the prison to a nearby building a mile away. After a six-month manhunt, Guzman was captured again after a shootout, and he was extradited to the U.S., where in February 2019, he was sentenced to life in prison. Guzman currently serving his sentence at the ADX Florence, the nation's most secure supermax prison.
All of this made Joaquin Guzman a sort of folk hero, gaining him notoriety and the nickname El Chapo.
El Chapo's life and drug dealings are indicative of the larger systems of drug cartels as a whole. These cartels can start small, but reach ludicrous levels of success and wealth, while also reaching heights of violence.
But how did these Mexican drug cartels get their start, and how did they rise to such prominence? In this episode, we'll be examining the timeline of Mexican drug cartels and how they've grown over time, increasing their influence on civil society in Mexico. I'm Imran Rizvi.
And I'm Olivia Francis.
We're two choir students at Barrington High School. And this is A Descent into War, The Rise of the Mexican Drug Cartels. First, let's define the word cartel. A cartel is simply an agreement between multiple businesses to control price and limit competition. Every industry has them. However, when it comes to drug cartels, these cartels can be very illegal and dangerous.
The seeds for Mexican drug cartels began to take root in the 1930s. In the 1930s, drugs such as cannabis began to be scrutinized in the United States after the formation of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics. Headed by Harry J. Anslinger, the FBN began to dissuade people from using recreational drugs by saying drugs cause people to become violent and act irrationally. The term used to describe it at the time was reefer madness.
High school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. innocently they dance, innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors. Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell. In this film, you will see the ease with which this vicious plant can be grown in your neighbor's yard, rolled into harmless-looking cigarettes, hidden in an innocent shoe or watch case.
In actuality, the U.S. government crackdown on marijuana stemmed from a plot by Anslinger to utilize racist sentiments towards Mexicans as a means to continue funding for the FBN. After Prohibition ended, the FBN was going to be disbanded. To prevent this from happening, Anslinger saw growing racist sentiments towards Mexicans and used them to demonize marijuana and fuel propaganda which led to the criminalization of marijuana in the USA.
In 1938, the Mexican president, Lorenzo Cárdenas, attempted to have the production of narcotics be placed under state control. In response, the U.S. put an embargo on all medical products coming from Mexico. To continue trade with the U.S., Mexico allowed for the industry to continue with secret help from the government. This is where the seeds of Mexico being a drug trafficking center took root. Between 1939 and 1945, the imports of opium, marijuana, and heroin were blocked from Turkey and Europe by World War II. So, Mexico had an increase in their production of poppy and hemp.
Throughout the early and mid-20th century, drug use, especially with cocaine and heroin, began to increase, particularly in the U.S. What caught the attention of most people was that Vietnam War veterans suffered from high rates of drug addiction. These drugs were often supplied by Colombian drug cartels headed by notorious drug lords such as Pablo Escobar. As drug use in the United States continued to increase, the U.S. government began working with South American countries to crack down on these big drug rings. In 1971, U.S. President Richard Nixon called drug abuse public enemy number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to summarize for you the meeting that I have just had with the bipartisan leaders, which began at 8 o'clock and was completed 2 hours later. I began the meeting by making this statement, which I think needs to be made to the nation. America's public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive. I have asked the Congress to provide the legislative authority and the funds to fuel this kind of an offensive. This will be a worldwide offensive dealing with the problems of sources of supply as well as Americans who may be stationed abroad, wherever they are in the world. It will be government-wide, pulling together the 9 different fragmented areas within the government in which this problem is now being handled. And it will be nationwide in terms of a new educational program that we trust will result as from the discussions that we have had.
In the 1980s, the U.S. finally was able to break up cocaine smuggling rings in Colombia. However, the Mexican drug rings, which had been mostly known for being marijuana sellers, began supplying cocaine. In 1984, the cocaine transport routes began moving into Mexico. Due to the lack of enforcement of drug laws, high rates of corruption, increasing demand for drugs in the U.S., and coercion of public officials, Mexico became a perfect storm for drug cartels to grow.
Drug cartels such as the Gulf Cartel, Cartel de Jalisco Nueva Generación, Los Zetas, and the before-mentioned Sinaloa Cartel began forming and quickly rising in notoriety and power.
Notable drug cartels include not only Sinaloa, but Tijuana as well. Tijuana, formed by the Arellano Felix family, grew to power in the 1980s. They were one of the most powerful Mexican cartels, selling mainly cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin.
When the Sinaloa cartel rose in the early 2000s, they became a fierce competitor for the Tijuana cartel and began selling the majority of illegal drugs to the United States. The Sinaloa cartel, led by El Chapo, was able to gain lots of power through murder, bribes, and the new smuggling technique we mentioned before. The Tijuana and Sinaloa cartels were both formed when the leader of the Guadalajara cartel was captured in 1989. When so many of these cartels began popping up, not only did the Mexican government get involved, but so did the U.S. government. In 1991, Mexico's president, Carlos Salinas, allowed for U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration officers to investigate in Mexico. Although the Mexican government put regulations on the DEA officers, like the locations and number of agents, the Mexican government still disregarded their own sovereignty.
As these drug cartels grew in their wealth, their influence in Mexican civil society did as well. Cartels bring in about $25 to $30 billion annually, and they employ 450,000 people. In Mexico, over 3 million people rely on cartels for their livelihood. This is because in some ways, Mexican drug cartels act as also almost Robin Hood-esque figures by funding schools, hospitals, and other essential elements to Mexican life.
However, these cartels are still very much dangerous. Between 2008 and 2017, over 230,000 people were murdered in Mexico, and over 66,000 people have gone missing. While not all these murders were perpetrated by drug cartels, there is a correlation between growth in Mexican drug cartels and rising homicide rates. To get their way, many cartels use coercion, blackmail, and torture. Additionally, in the past decade, some cartels have absorbed human trafficking rings, and now some cartels not only smuggle drugs, but also people across the border.
To combat drug cartels, in 2006, the Mexican government began the Mexican Drug War, an effort to end drug cartels in Mexico. This effort is still going on today.
This relates back to civil society and the relationship with the government, like we talked about in class.
I agree. The drug cartels, although illegal, are non-governmental organizations that can be limited by government through monitoring, hence the Mexican drug war.
The catalyst for the war on drugs was when the Familia Michoacana cartel, an offshoot of the Los Zetas cartel, threw five human heads onto the dance floor of a nightclub in Arapan, Michoacan. And then 2 months later, famous singer Valentine Elizalde was killed in an ambush. In 2006, President Felipe Calderon took office and launched Operation Michoacan against the Familia Michoacana, making Mexico the second American country to militarize the drug war.
Over the past 15 years, the Mexican government has launched numerous operations against drug cartels, often targeting the leaders of these cartels. While the Mexican governments have been able to take out many drug lords, this may be doing more harm than good. This is because these cartels are like hydras. Cut one head off and two more grow back in their place. For example, in 2010, when Nazario Moreno Gonzalez, leader of Familia Michoacana cartel, was allegedly killed, not only did the Familia Michoacana cartel continue to operate, but also a splinter cartel, the Knights Templarla, rose as well.
Mexican cartels grew in strength and numbers over the years as more cartels split up or an event sparked the formation of new ones. We saw today how the Mexican and U.S. governments reacted and interacted with these cartels to combat the flow of illegal drugs. We also saw how large of a part the Mexican drug cartels were for civil society and so many people's livelihoods.
Next time, we'll be delving deeper into intercountry relations with the Mexican drug cartels. I'm Olivia Francis.
And I'm Aaron Rizzi. Good night, folks.